What up? Back again for another great episode of the FTN Fantasy Show. Holiday season is here. I am ready to be fed, but man, we got to help the fantasy streets. And I am joined here by my great co-host, Matt Okada. My brother, what's going on?
What's going on is the preparation for Thanksgiving, Laquan. Mm-hmm. No preparation for anything past that. All of you, stop it. I'm tired of all this Christmas music, setting up trees before Thanksgiving.
What do you mean? Give
the respect it deserves. Then on Black Friday or even on Thanksgiving night, we can move on. That's fully legal.
It's crazy because some folks are putting their tree up after the day after Halloween. What are we doing? No, we are literally skipping holidays. Like, I am not a fan of that. I'm glad we're on the same page of that. Like, I told the wife, the tree does not go up until Black Friday. Like, that has been exactly the tradition in my family for years and years down. Like, it was one of the things, like, hey, do the shopping, you know, get the Christmas gifts for the discount, come home, family gets together, put the tree up, and now we're in December. But man, the fantasy playoffs are around the corner. The trade deadline is a lock this week. That is it, folks. The folks that are listening right now, you need to be making moves. You need to make moves before the buzzer beater. Some leagues are locking it up on a Friday, Okada. On a Friday, they are locking up the fantasy trade deadline. So, listen, I know you got the must-need-to-know for Week 12. So, what are we cooking with this week?
Yeah, we got a few things. Let's start it off with a name that maybe people have not heard much lately or been too excited about lately, and it's Zay Flowers. Everybody remembers Zay Flowers had that really, really hot start to the year. A couple weeks, he looked like, wow, the Ravens have figured out how to use him. He's going to be the wide receiver one for Baltimore and maybe a wide receiver one for fantasy.
Yeah.
He sort of slipped out of that and has been like a low upside wide receiver three or four the rest of the year. However, I think there is a very good opportunity for a huge bounce back for Zay Flowers down the stretch. Here's some reasons why. 2.6 yards per route run on the year. That is fifth most among players with 200 plus routes, and all the guys ahead of him are elite names like Puka Nacua and Jackson Smith and Jigba. 9.9 yards per target. That's also near the top of the league. But somehow, he has not scored a touchdown since week one, which means two, he leads the NFL in receptions, 46, targets, 62, and receiving yards, 560, without scoring a touchdown. I know that doesn't sound great, but what it tells me is regression, positive regression, is coming for Zay Flowers. He is due to score. And I think that it will happen on the stretch. And we have to remember, there was a large chunk of the season that Lamar Jackson got hurt, then missed, then came back. Maybe you could say a little bit limited. Like, he has not been running much lately. I think that that limits the offense. So down the stretch, as Lamar Jackson continues to get healthy, as this offense continues to regel, I think Zay Flowers has a very good chance to be what he was early in the year, or at least closer to that fantasy wide receiver one territory. And it's worth noting his matchups down the stretch. Jets defense this week, which might have sounded scary at some other time, but yeah, they've given up completely on playing.
Culture's gone.
Yep. And then they've got the Bengals, Steelers, Bengals again, and Patriots, all of which are good matchups in the fantasy playoff stretch. So I think he has a legitimate shot at being a high-end wide receiver two again. If your trade deadline's not passed and you want to try to go get him, feel free. But the other thing, the more important thing is, if you've been stuck him away on your roster, disappointed in his performance, I think you're going to get something great out of him down the stretch.
All right. I'm so in on a back end of the season resurgence of Zay Flowers getting back to that 43% target share he basically started off in the beginning of the year. Because like you said, they figured out how to get him in space, which makes him dangerous. And he was getting all the attention from Lamar, you know, before injury. So I do like that. I see the doc and I'm kind of side-eyeing my face. I'm like, this is crazy. But what's your number two must need to know for week 12? I'm very interested to hear this one.
Trevor Lawrence and JJ McCarthy. This is a double feature for the podcast, Laquan, although they were each had their own section in the article, are killers for fantasy. And I don't mean killers like they're killing it. I mean killers like they are killing the fantasy value of everybody on their teams. They stink, Laquan.
Yes, let's go. Because I saw this and I was just like, I'm wondering how you're about to see this. Because I didn't see Trevor mid-Lawrence. I just saw Trevor Lawrence. But listen, I like how you spun that.
I'll tell you why there was no mid in the middle of his name, Laquan. It's because we've moved past that. Mid is a compliment to Trevor Lawrence at this point. And I honestly don't know where the rest of the fantasy community and NFL community is on Trevor Lawrence, but I am fully, fully, completely, and totally ready to say he is a massive bust. He has had way too long with too many decent offensive coordinators, great weapons, and he just constantly underperforms. Stinks. He stinks.
Why do we have to pretend? Why are the fantasy streets pretending, Okada? Like, are they stuck in the Matrix? Like, what are we doing?
I think everybody is attached to this idea that he was the next Andrew Luck, next Peyton Manning, and we're more unwilling than normal to give up on that for some reason. But listen, 33 qualified passers this year, Laquan. Trevor Lawrence is 31st in passer rating, 79.4. The only two quarterbacks worse than him are Cam Ward.
I was going to say Cam. That's
Cam Ward. Wait,
go ahead.
Because Cam Ward is playing like the worst number one quarterback I've ever seen. Like, he's making Trevor Lawrence look okay, which is sad. And then the one other guy behind Trevor Lawrence is J.J. McCarthy.
Oh, J.J. Oh, this is beautiful how you're teeing and transitioning to this.
This is how we bring it full circle. J.J. McCarthy and Trevor Lawrence are down in the bottom three in pass rating alongside Cam Ward. Trevor Lawrence's touchdown to interception ratio, 11 to 8 in 10 games. That's barely a passing touchdown per game with 8 picks. That is a ratio that is worse than Bryce Young, worse than Michael Penix Jr., worse than Spencer Rattler. His EPA per dropback is worse than Russell Wilson or Marcus Mariota. It's bad. It's real bad. And I will say this.
Did you just say Russell Wilson and Marcus Mariota?
Those are the two names that I said, Laquan. I will say this. A lot of people, a lot of the Trevor Truthers, as they are called, the people who don't believe in your mid-o-meter, they will say, but Okada, but Laquan, he has the highest drop rate in the league, 8.5%. His receivers have been letting him down. And I will say to you, what's that you said, Laquan?
How catchable are these balls?
Listen, everybody needs to understand there are two ways of looking at catchability with passes. One is it like within the frame of the receiver where they can theoretically catch the ball? And if that is the case and they don't catch the ball, that's typically how drops are counted. So if it's somewhere within, you know, the 3-4 foot radius and they should be able to get a hand on it and then they don't catch it or it hits their hands, then that's considered a drop. But there's another form of considering catchability. And I think it goes very underrated in the fantasy community and maybe even sometimes in the NFL fandom community because people don't know about these kinds of things as much. But there is a reality to how catchable a ball is thrown by a quarterback, regardless of where it's exactly, like whether it's within the radius. Because you want it to be in a certain place depending on where the route is run. You want it to be in a certain place depending on where the defender is. You want it to be at a certain pace when the ball is thrown. Like, we all remember Cam Newton gunning balls in there, and it was really hard for receivers to catch passes from Cam Newton because he would throw it harder than it needed to be thrown.
Jam my finger then, watching that.
Exactly. Sometimes you can put too little pace on the ball and there's too much touch on the ball. And while it might get to the receiver's hands, the DB has been given a chance to get there and can, you know, break up or cause pressure to the receiver that makes it harder to catch. When you have a drop rate as high as 8.5%, like Trevor Lawrence has, it is not all on the receivers. And it's not like he has the droppiest receivers in the league either. So I believe he's throwing very uncatchable balls. I think he's unable to run this Liam Cohen offense well enough. Yeah. And I just do not think he is a good quarterback. And then basically everything I just said, you can mostly copy paste it all onto JJ McCarthy. His numbers are even worse. If you look at his TD to INT ratio, yeah, it's 8 interceptions to 6 touchdowns. So it's backwards. His pass rating is the worst. It's lower than Cam Ward. His EPA per dropback is second worst in the league. Only Jake Browning is worse. He has a lower success rate than Dylan Gabriel. The lowest accuracy rate. All the stuff from FTN Stats Hub that tells you this is the deep number stuff that reveals to me how bad a quarterback truly is, besides just like, yeah, oh, fantasy points per game. It's bad for these two guys. And obviously you don't feel great starting either of them, but that's not the main takeaway here, Laquan. The main takeaway here is you need to worry about their receivers. It means
bingo.
I've given up on the Parker Washington breakout. I was excited about Parker Washington because I like his talent, but his quarterback can't throw the dang ball. So I'm not starting Parker Washington anymore. I've already been way out on Brian Thomas Jr. You know this. The listeners know this. I have no interest in trying to acquire him for the playoff run or stash him for the playoff run. I don't think he's going to be any good. And then on the flip side, Jordan Addison's probably can't be started. He'll have some big days, but with this offense and with the way JJ McCarthy is throwing the ball, less than a touchdown per game, basically, you just can't trust in enough passing volume going around and passing production going around for him to be good. He's become
very touchdown dependent. And I feel like 100%. if you're box scoring and you see he ended up with a touchdown, you're not really watching like how he's getting these touchdowns. Like, it's garbage time. It's like a blown coverage. It's not off of skill, you know, because like JJ McCarthy has the worst passer rating, the worst completion percentage, and under no pressure. And 7 of his 8 interceptions have come from zero pressure. These are decisions being made under no pressure. This is the chuck it and they're down there somewhere ball. No, we need some type of structure in this offense, Okada. Like, that is trash. And then
the worst part of this, Laquan, is the Justin Jefferson aspect.
Now speak on it, because folks right now are rubbing their hands like Birdman. They're looking at this playoff schedule. I'm fearful that some of these fantasy managers that are right on the cusp, the 5-6 teams that you just took an L and you need to win every single out, and you have Justin Jefferson, but you think there's hope. You think there's hope because of the strong playoff schedule. You might not make it. And if you do make it, can you trust it with this quarterback? That's my biggest red flag right now.
You might be able to make it. It depends on the rest of your team. And he might have okay or slightly better games than normal across that stretch with green matchups, Laquan. But he just had 2 green matchups in the Ravens and the Bears. Back to back, both green. In any app you look at, he scored 14.3 half PPR fantasy points combined over those 2 weeks. Not average, combined. That is rough. And he
nasty
all year, he has not hit 18 fantasy points in a single game.
But how do you tell a fantasy manager that you should be worried or even question the decision to start him in one of the most important times in the year, which is the fantasy playoffs? You lose once, you're gone. And Okada, this is a serious, serious deadline coming up. A lot of folks' deadlines are locked at Friday at noon. There's no more trades being moved. This is your championship team. I think a buzzer beater right now to sell off Justin Jefferson off of your roster for a haul. Get a huge roster-changing type of trade package put together right now. Because I think getting Justin Jefferson, you can paint that picture like, yeah, look at the playoff schedule. Ah, JJ McCarthy's going to get better. Come on. It's still volume is king, right, Okada? That's what we can agree on, that volume is king for these wide receivers. I'm looking to get a huge haul back right before the deadline, Okada. I mean, sheesh, this is just one of those situations. What does a fantasy manager do right now?
Yeah. I mean, I will tell you straight up, I'd rather have Jalen Waddle than Justin Jefferson rest of season.
Wow.
I'd rather have George Pickens than Justin Jefferson rest of season. I'd rather have a currently injured Drake London than Justin Jefferson rest of season.
That's big. Wow.
I'm his upside is not there. His floor is way lower than any wide receiver one outside of like fluke games like Amon-Ra's game last week. It's not going to happen again. He had 12 targets for heaven's sakes. I'm terrified. And if you can get out of Justin Jefferson for like Laquan saying a good haul, do it.
Abso-freaking-lutely, because it's scary right now in the fantasy streets. But give us your third must-know for week 12.
All right, this one is rough. It's a little bit unfortunate, but it needs to be said. Man. Yeah. Maybe I should have saved Zay Flowers for the end for some hope.
Yeah, geez, we're going out on a sad note. Like,
oopsie. Bro. Oopsie dalical. Emeka Ebuka. Emeka Ebuka is not what you think he is. Because anybody who had Emeka Ebuka on their team early into the year, 5 weeks into his rookie season, when he was the fantasy wide receiver 3 overall, looked unbelievable, unstoppable. I don't think that any of them, or many of them, have really assessed just what Emeka Ebuka has done over the last 5 weeks. Because sometimes, and this happens a lot, Laquan, it's an important thing to remember for all our listeners. The first month take lock that happens in fantasy can lose you seasons because our brains are wired to lock in what we see over that first stretch of the season and then just assume it's going to be that way and keep putting these guys in. But then 5 weeks later, we're not willing to adjust, even though it's been the same amount of time. So he was the wide receiver 3 overall through the first 5 weeks. In the 5 games since, he has been mostly terrible. He had 20.5 fantasy points in week 10 against the Patriots. That was a great game, of course. But in the other 4 contests since week 6, his highest result, 7.8 fantasy points. And in those 4 games, 22.7 points total. Total, Laquan. He is still seeing a ton of targets. He saw 12 in week 7, but only scored 7.8 fantasy points. He saw 9 in week 8, but he only scored 5 fantasy points. He had 9 targets this past Sunday against the Bills, 6.5 fantasy points. I don't know if it's because Mike Evans is missing and he's getting more attention. I don't know if it's because defenses have just tuned into who he is in general and are willing to put their top corner on him. I don't know if Baker has lost a touch. But whatever it is, we need to be cognizant of the fact that for basically just as long as Ebuka was dominating, he has not produced. And this is another important note, I think, for fantasy players. We love targets. We love volume. You said it earlier. Volume is king. Mm-hmm. However, the only thing we really care about more than volume, Laquan, is fantasy points. Because the only point of volume is to get...
Have you gotten fantasy points for targets? Have you ever been in the league? You've gotten fantasy points for targets? I'm just asking.
I have not. I've played in the Scott Fishbowl where they have some weird rules every year.
And we haven't been rewarded that yet. So I can pretty sure that Scott is tapped in to the FTN Fantasy Show right now. We're going to start getting points for targets. I'm ready for it. 2026, sign me up. Let's do it.
He has 3 tough matchups to close the season, which is not going to help. I think it's time we acknowledge that Emeka Ebuka is not the locked and loaded wide receiver 1 that we thought he was after 5 weeks. The targets are enough that you can still put him in your lineup most of the time. You probably will be putting him in your lineup most of the time, even though he's largely hurt you over this past month plus.
Yeah.
But A, if this continues, that might have to stop. And B, he's just not the locked and loaded starter that you thought he was early on.
So I want to do a segment for next week. Holiday season's coming up, but I want to do a segment next week. League losers, right? Ooh. This is where we're going to point out the imposters, because I think right now a lot of people have what you're talking about, this picture in their head about Emeka Ebuka just firing off. The offense is slowly but surely getting more healthier. Bucky's on his way back. Cool. Chris Godwin looks to be trending some point at the back end of the season. Mike Evans as well. At full strength, this Bucks offense could be scary, but that just makes the targets be distributed a little bit more evenly. So I don't think we get that type of production. So I think he could possibly be our number one in next week's segment as league losers. Like, there's a lot of imposters out there. I could see Justin Jefferson there too as well.
It's an important one. And the reverse is also important. Like, there's a guy in the article. I won't even tell the listeners his name, but if you go check out the article on FTNFantasy.com, you can read it. Who's the reverse? First 5 weeks, he was awful. Last 5 weeks, he's been one of the best running backs, hint, hint, in fantasy, and you need to know that.
So that's go check those out. You got to go check it out. FTNFantasy.com, lock in, tap in. I want to hit some topics, man. Now, when I say topics, it's what's whispering in the fantasy streets. I got my ear very close. I really want to hear each and every single question. And I appreciate you guys hitting me up on the TikTok at Real Deal Fantasy on Instagram. And of course, you could bug Matt Okada. He's on TikTok as well. He is on Instagram as well, I believe. I don't know. I'm lying. I don't have that confirmed. No, Okada, you on the IG? Yep. Okay. Okada's on IG.
I almost never use it, but I'm there.
Exactly. Twitter's like, I hate to assume because, like, I feel like Instagram's becoming what Facebook was. Like, it's the old app. Like, I don't know many people that, you know, are actively on Instagram, you know, day in and day out anymore. It's either the two apps.
It's not me. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. But anyway, to get to the point, I want to talk about some hard topics in terms of the first one that I think a lot of people are affected. Caleb Williams. Are you trusting him, Okada? Are you trusting him this week against the Steelers? Like, can you start him with confidence? Like, I'm not talking like if you have no option, then obviously. But like, if you have a decision, like, I could either start Matthew Stafford this week. Do I start Caleb Williams against the Steelers this week?
I am not starting Caleb Williams this week, Laquan.
Not only
am I not starting him, I don't know if you do this on purpose or not, but somehow these seem to line up all the time. He is the quarterback fade in my Yahoo fades and busts article.
Okay.
I am staying away from Caleb Williams, and I'll tell you why. Number one, he has been good sometimes. He has also been bad a lot of times. He has four games with 24-plus fantasy points, but he also has four games with fewer than 13 fantasy points. So if he doesn't pop off, he hurts you very badly. And that's not what I'm looking for in my quarterback position. Three of those bad, less than 13-point games came in the last 5 weeks. And he has thrown one touchdown or fewer in six of his last seven games. That is concerning. Nasty. Now, a lot of people are going to look at their app, and this is part of why the question is probably brought up, and see a good green matchup with the Steelers. The Steelers are green. Ooh, that looks nice. Maybe I'll target them. Here's the thing. Last 3 weeks, the Steelers have kind of fixed their defense, I believe.
Oh, yeah?
They have faced Daniel Jones, Justin Herbert, and a previously very productive Joe Flacco over the last 3 weeks. That's a strong stretch of fantasy quarterbacks, at least. They've been held to an average of 14.2 fantasy points per game, those three guys. I would argue those three guys have been better than Caleb Williams for most of the year. And they were disappointing three straight games. And three touchdowns, four interceptions, and two fumbles lost for that crew. I'm concerned. I do not want to roll Caleb Williams out this week. He's like a top 15 quarterback, but he's not a top 12 or top 10 quarterback for me. So if you have another option, if you can stream someone, I'd much rather go another direction.
I absolutely love that you said that. Because the fantasy streets are buzzing right now. There's a lot of takes that Caleb Williams is a start this week. A bounce back week in form how it's being presented. No. Okada had the numbers. He got the stats. I think the Steelers actually figured out their team because they're actually top three in sacks right now. They're a team that are getting after it. There's a high sack percentage back behind them, and they could be disruptive. And that's been one of Caleb's weaknesses is when the pocket is disrupted and the timing is off with his pass catchers. This is where we see the old fashioned rollout, try to play the hero, bullet throw to absolutely nobody. Because if you look at some of these stats, I like to dip into. I like to look at on the run. When I see folks that are running at the plus 8 miles per hour on the next gen stats, right? You look at who's number one, which is obvious, is Bo Nix, right? 100 attempts while on the run. Then you have Caleb Williams at 69, second in the league. But then when you look at what he's actually doing when he's extending the play, because a lot of folks have a problem with him holding the ball long, but that's part of his superpower. he has the lowest completion percentage and the worst passer rating when on the run. These are incomplete plays. This is a team, like I said, the Steelers, that can be disruptive at times. This is what's causing him not to have the exact timing of his pass catchers. Because Okada, there's a lot of where folks are not even putting two and two together. Ben Johnson, this system had a non-mobile quarterback to execute these timing plays. And timing is very important in this offensive scheme. Time and time again, where we see that the O-line has made improvements, but this O-line ain't elite. There's still times where this is leaking out, and why he's second in the league on the run in those attempts. Because there's such a focus of timing on this. This could be a game where you hit those lows. We're not going to see a lot of the touchdowns, not a lot of catches. Roma Dunze leads that team in drop passes, but we know he could be a wide receiver one. So I'm a little hesitant with the pass catchers even in this game.
Yeah, I agree. I am concerned. TJ Watt, very good.
Last time I checked, right?
Yeah.
It's insane. But I want to get to another quarterback that has some question marks. Now, I'm hoping that Daniel Jones and this Colts team is coming out of this bye ready to go, right? Do you start Daniel Jones this week, though, after what he has displayed these last couple of weeks?
This is a very tough one, Laquan, for many reasons. One, yeah. I think the Chiefs are pissed. The Chiefs...
they got to be.
They're in trouble, and they got to get something figured out. I think they will, because I believe in Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes more than just about any duo in the league. But it's got to happen soon, and it might have to happen this week. If they don't, if it doesn't happen this week, they're gonna have a losing record going into Week 13, which is insane. However, Daniel Jones and the Colts run play action at the second highest rate in the National Football League, Laquan, behind only the Los Angeles Rams.
Hey.
The Chiefs are terrible against play action. If you dig into the numbers, they have allowed an NFL high 0.41 EPA per dropback, 63.5% success rate, 81% completion rate on play action, 11 yards per attempt on play action, which is the second most in the league. They have not faced much play action volume. So, like, the raw stats aren't as high, but all these rate stats are high, and the Colts are going to run a ton of play action because they always do. That's going to open up chances for Daniel Jones, Alec Pierce, Michael Pittman Jr. to hit these big plays downfield, and that is a good way to beat the Chiefs, is to throw haymakers that land, basically.
Yeah.
I don't really believe in Daniel Jones that much. I don't really believe in the Colts that much. I've been saying all year I think they're a bit fluky, and I think they're going to fade down the stretch. However, and this is a tough defense overall, but this one weakness that they have could be exploited by a team that exploits that weakness at one of the highest rates in the league. To me, that's the optimistic case for Daniel Jones, is that he hits on a bunch of play action. He might need to get Jonathan Taylor going to do that, but Jonathan Taylor can get going against just about anyone. So yeah. To me, I think Daniel Jones is a fringe start. You said, you know, the question is start or sit. I think it really depends on who you've got. I think there are a lot of guys.
I got Caleb Williams.
No, I would go Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones,
it's
I would
a,
take
it's
over
the actual
Williams.
Situation in super flex leagues where you
that's
have
a good
to start
one.
Both these quarterbacks, though.
Exactly. That's a good answer. But you know who I would start over him with confidence? Jacoby Brissett.
Oh, let's go. I love me some Jacoby Brissett, man. He is balling. He's actually like somebody
he is balling.
To trade for. He's a trade target, buzzer beater, get yourself some stability. And what did we talk about last episode? Who they play in the championship? The Bengals. Let's go.
I'd also roll Jared Goff out there over him. There's That's a number good. Of players that I would play. If you've got a duo, I would. There's a number of guys I would play over Daniel Jones, but I would also play Daniel Jones over a number of guys you might normally start, like Caleb Williams. So it's very fringe there. It depends on who you have.
All right, let's take it down to Tampa. I mean, Bucky Irvin, talk of the town right now. I mean, What are your expectations if he gets the green light against my Rams this week? Now, we know how stout and strong this Rams defense has been all season long. Only two rushing touchdowns to the running back position this week. What would be your actual expectations if Bucky gets the green light this week?
My expectations would be tempered, hopeful, but not confident. This Rams run D, I mean, you know Laquan is better than anyone, is nasty. They are just crushing running backs, not allowing them to score. The fantasy points aren't great in general. And you're talking about Bucky off a long, long absence with a capable backup that they could help ease Bucky back into game.
That's Sean
Bucky
Tucker, match. Right?
There's actually two arguably capable backups.
Nah, you got it right. Sean Tucker. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, he's looked good, and he's done this before. So yeah. When you've got the, like, if Bucky were, let's say, Josh Jacobs. Josh Jacobs is in a kind of similar, I mean, he's not missing a ton of time, but if Josh Jacobs were to play despite coming off this injury, you, or Jonathan Taylor is another good example. Yeah. You're not going to give the other backs in that depth chart a bunch of touches to help ease that guy back, because that guy is your true, true bell cow, and you don't have other guys that you trust to run the rock. But Tampa Bay does. Bucky's been gone for a long time, so I am very concerned that he gets a 35-40% snap share, gets like 10 to 12 touches. And that is not enough against this Rams defense. Unless he happens to break a 40-yard touchdown, I don't feel great about
it. Which has been rare. Like, we've seen Kenneth Walker bust off a big run last week, but that doesn't happen often. It's like, I think the night and day transition from the defense last year stopping the run to this year, like, this is why I believe we're on a Super Bowl run right now. Like, this defense has been lights out. So, yeah, my expectations are low. I do want to see him back in action just so I can posture and see, like, did I make the right decision locking him in, you know, beyond the trade deadline, you know, or did I just acquire him for the low or for whatever you did before the deadline? Like, which player am I going to get coming out? And I do think you hit the nail on the head, though, but I'm a little worried about the workload because, like, we've seen him as the workhorse and get injured now twice when he has had multiple games of high touch value. But I'm going to say this. I love that they are able to use him efficiently, putting him in where it matters. But my expectations this week, if he was to get the green light, are aligned with yours, Okada. I mean, let's talk about another running back. Javonte Williams. What's good, brother? We need those fantasy points. Like, is this guy really touchdown dependent? Like, I know he has a history of catching the ball out the backfield. I mean, we saw Sean Payton bring that out of him last year with the Denver Broncos. Like, are we okay? Are we worried against the Eagles, Okada? Like, what are we doing?
Couple things. First of all, before we move on, I'd like to point out, Laquan, I don't know if I ever told you this. I picked the Rams to go to the Super Bowl before the season from the NFC. Just saying.
Yes. And it might be Rams
and Patriots. I feel very confident they will make it.
It might be Rams Patriots and we're going.
No. The Patriots aren't making it. It's not happening. But I do like how he's I am not worried about Javonte Williams, and I'll tell you why. Oddly, for some reason, the catches have dried up this past about month, but he was raking in catches earlier in the year, and he's still gotten heavily involved now and then. It just hasn't quite hit. And then from a rushing perspective, like, obviously you're concerned about these last 2 weeks primarily because he only had 6.8 last two games, I should say, because they had their bye in week 10. 6.8 fantasy points, 9.8 fantasy points. You see single digits in half PPR, you're not feeling great. But in those two games, he had 15 carries for 83 rushing yards and 23 carries for 93 rushing yards. Like, I understand you want to see 15, 18 fantasy points from your running back. But when your guy is putting up 80 to 90 rushing yards consistently, you just have to understand that sometimes the touchdown is not going to happen. Sometimes they're not going to catch 3-4 passes for 30 yards. And you're going to end up with these high single-digit games. But that kind of involvement and that kind of production, to me, tells me that I'm still confident rolling him out there. The Eagles are a decent defense against the run. They're actually not terrifying in terms of fantasy points, at least to running backs. So I'm rolling Javonte Williams out with confidence. I think he's a mid to high end RB2. He might not be like the elite RB1 he was earlier in the year when he was catching the ball four or five times a game. And scoring at will. But I think that will come back for him, and I'm happy to roll him out there with confidence.
Yeah, because I only ask that because, like, some folks are like the Cowboys. They look a little shaky. Like, the Cowboys, they don't look good on offense anymore. What is wrong with Dak? And, like, they just blew out the Raiders, right? And that's the strongest that we've seen this offense kind of flex their ability with the crash bros, I call them, with CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens. But, like, this offense is still one of the top five offenses in my book that will constantly be in striking distance. And Javonte, last time he played the Eagles, man, he scored two of them things. So I don't think we need to really, like, overthink a Javonte Williams situation, because the fantasy streets were buzzing. They were buzzing last week. And it's like, why are you complaining? My boy's getting it done on the ground. But yeah, moving on. I got to ask you now about Kyle Pitts. This is a personal question right now. This is the last man standing in Atlanta. I am heading into the trade deadline for context, right? I'm looking to keep Kyle Pitts as the last man standing. But what are your expectations, Okada, the rest of the season?
They're middling at best. The targets theoretically should go up because Drake London's set to miss time. Darnell Mooney's constantly banged up. I could see him getting more targets. But he just has not hit enough for me to feel great. He scored one touchdown all year, which, why is this a thing in Atlanta? Is he like, does he not know how to run routes in the red zone or something?
But I think when you have Drake London, you're always going to look for the guy that is great at the contested catch. Like, he is a touchdown red zone fade machine. Like, I think you go for the automatic, and you got to remember, this is a team with only three wins. They're desperate. So they're going to go with the automatic. So I get that portion of it, but what I don't get is, like, the targets will go up, but are the catches are going to go up? How catchable are these balls going to be?
They're going to be coming from a different arm, and they're coming from a different direction, because Kirk Cousins is playing quarterback for the rest of the year, which means no more lefty Michael Penix Jr. throwing the ball. Now, is that a good thing? I don't know, Laquan. I don't know that anyone knows, because Michael Penix Jr. has not been great. I would say he's been okay at best, probably worse than okay. Yeah. The last time we saw Kirk Cousins over a decent stretch of time, he wasn't great. He was bad enough to get benched for Michael Penix Jr. So has he gotten better over the course of a year as a backup? I don't really imagine so. So there's a lot of, like, unknowns and question marks here. Is Kyle Pitts going to get the more targets? Maybe, but we don't know. Is he going to catch those targets? Maybe, but we don't know. Is Kirk Cousins going to throw a better ball than Michael Penix Jr.? Maybe, but we don't know. Is Kyle Pitts ever going to catch a touchdown again? Maybe, but we don't know. Like, he's startable in pinches, and there's an opportunity for him to be better, but I don't have enough confidence in Kyle Pitts to roll him out there week to week and feel great about it. There are other tight ends in the streaming conversation I'd probably rather start.
Speaking of the other tight ends, are we overlooking Colston Loveland? Like, is he not getting the respect that he should be getting right now in these last couple weeks?
I guess it depends on who you talk to and how high the respect is, because the first thing that I said after week 9, and I said it in multiple places, Laquan, I might have even said it here, is do not overreact to what Colston Loveland did against the Bengals. Did I say this on this podcast?
You did.
Okay. Yeah. Because he was great for fantasy, but he scored half of his fantasy points on one play with 13 seconds left. And all the fantasy points he scored were against the Bengals, who, as I mentioned, I think on that pod, are worse against tight ends than you, me, and our grandmas. I believe that was my exact quote. Since then, he's been better than he was earlier in the year. Like, it's somewhat clear that they saw his breakout game and said, we should get him a little bit more involved. So he's had 4 catches on 4 targets for 55 yards, 3 catches on 4 targets for 40 yards these past 2 weeks. Obviously, neither of those are anywhere close to what he did against the Bengals, and those are largely what Kyle Pitts is doing. So I don't know that Colston Loveland is any more exciting than Kyle Pitts right now. I like when you're looking at Colson Loveland and you're saying, what should I expect? What has he done this year? What do his stats look like? I'm throwing that Bengals game out. And people might get mad at me for that. Like, oh, you can't just take out a player's best game. If we take out every player's best game, what's it? Blah, 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 blah. I am throwing that game out.
I agree.
Because it was weird. Cole Kmet was out. It was the worst defense against the tight end. He's never going to play them again. And again, he scored 13 points on one play with 13 seconds left. So when you take that game out, he has done between next to nothing and nothing all year. I'm not excited about starting him. I think he's in a similar position as Kyle Pitts is, except that he is in an offense with a bunch of other weapons who can easily take targets week to week. And so, like, if he was in a Tyler Warren situation where Tyler Warren's getting constantly peppered by the Colts and constantly utilized, they're like building their offense often around use of Tyler Warren, I would feel really good about Colson Loveland. But that's not the case in Chicago. It's a different guy every week, and I don't believe it's going to be Colson Loveland more often than not down the stretch.
Here's another personal one here for you, boy. Now, obviously, me making the rundown, there has to be some little bit of influence of me constructing the show, and I got to ask, because is this Tetero McMillan breakout real or fake? Because your boy benched him last week. I don't know why I did that, but it was reasonable, man. It's one of those benches where, you know, you wanted to try something new and you got cute and you paid for it. 33 fantasy points this guy had on my bench. I was impressed. But is this real or fake? Can we get some stability here of him finding the end zone?
First of all, I do not think anyone should be judged for sitting Tetero McMillan last week. He had hit single-digit fantasy points in three or four games entering that matchup, and the Falcons had been mostly pretty good against wide receivers in the passing game on the year. You know, they have a very good cornerback over there. However, 130 yards and two touchdowns on 12 targets cannot be ignored, so now we're in a, maybe a little bit of a different place. I would say it's reek or fail. Fail doesn't sound right.
Reek. We'll call it reek.
Neither of those sounds good. It's real fake.
Rake.
It's real fake. Oh yeah, rake is good. It's rake.
Yeah.
I don't think he's gonna do this again for the rest of the year. I think this was probably his best game as a rookie. Which, like, he scored 29 fantasy points in half PPR, 33 in full PPR.
So we should just put a pin in that game as a look back. Exactly. Like, hey, he had this career high. He had this big game against a defense that's particularly known to be tough against the wide receiver position in terms of fantasy points. I mean, that's a great look back. But to say it's not going to ever happen again this season, I mean,
This is my concern. When have you seen Bryce Young put together a stretch of great games?
We could stop right there because right now I could not even think.
Never.
It's cooked. All right.
The only reason Tetero McMillan has been mostly bad or like middling for fantasy this year is because his quarterback does not produce. I don't think Bryce Young is terrible, but he doesn't produce. He's the first number in his passing yards box score every week is a one almost every week. And that's just not enough for me to feel great about his receivers. Now, his number last week, if I'm not mistaken, was a four. So
like almost 500 yards. I'm like, hey, what is this? Where did this come from, brother?
I have to believe I'm a Bryce Young truther, so I hope I'm wrong here, but I have to believe that that was a fluke. And that Bryce Young largely goes back to putting a one in the beginning of that yards column most weeks. And I don't feel great about throwing Tetero McMillan in my lineup most weeks with that being the case. Now, that being said, he should still be started in a lot of leagues. I think he's like a fringe wide receiver two, mid-end wide receiver three most places. So if you start three wide receivers in your league, if your best flex option is a wide receiver like Tet McMillan, especially in PPR, you're starting him. But I don't think we're going to see this kind of upside from him very often because I just don't believe that Bryce Young is going to produce like that most weeks. For what it's worth, I think Tetero McMillan is an incredible wide receiver who is going to be Mike Evans-esque over the course of his career.
I like that.
But I just can't trust him to do this frequently right now with Bryce playing like he has most of his career.
It might have to happen with another quarterback. That is not out of the question. I think the Panthers will be in position, you know, for the next couple seasons to get a quarterback if they keep on playing like this. But hey, 6 wins this season. That's the most that Bryce Young has had in his career. So
wild.
Let's hope the arrow is pointing up where Tetaroa McMillan can keep on lighting up on Sundays. Now, last question, man. This one I thought we brought up last week, and I do think it's worthy to be questioned. Is Xavier Worthy even worthy of a roster spot right now before the trade deadline and then heading into the fantasy playoffs?
First of all, I like what you did there. In answer to your question, I think we should change his name to Xavier Not Worthy because no, he's not. Incidentally, I write a trade article, buy, sell, or hold for 4 for 4 every week. This was the last one this week of the year because of the trade deadline, and he was the sell at wide receiver. And my opening sentence of the blurb, Laquan, was, to be honest, I'm not entirely sure what you can get for Xavier Worthy in your league. But then I go on to say, whatever it is, take it. I have zero interest in playing Xavier Worthy. He has been a 6 straight weeks single-digit fantasy points bust.
Wow.
He has not topped 55 receiving yards since Rashee Rice returned, and he's only scored 1 touchdown all year, which was back in week 6. Wow. I didn't like Xavier Worthy coming into the year. I didn't like Xavier Worthy coming into the NFL. I certainly don't like him now. If this was the Chiefs of 2018, Laquan, Xavier Worthy would probably be a great fantasy asset. But we need to take a step back and understand what Chiefs these are. These are not those Chiefs. These are the play defense Chiefs. These are not the 350 passing yards and 4 touchdowns a game by Patrick Mahomes Chiefs. So when Rashee Rice is taking up everything he is, when Travis Kelce is low-key becoming like prime Travis Kelce again,
talk this about is
it. Underrated storyline.
Yards for FTN reception. Article.
Yeah, he's been great. There's just not room for Xavier Worthy to be good. He will have 3-4 targets a game. He might catch one of them for 25-30 yards, but if he doesn't catch one for 90 yards or somehow fall into the end zone, which again, he's done once all year, he is going to bust for you. So I'm not rolling him out in any lineups ever. And to me, he is a roster clogger. He is like the Tony Pollard of wide receivers, where you feel like you can't drop him. And you feel like he's getting points for you somewhat commonly, but he's so often getting terrible scoring outputs that he's hurting you just because he's on your roster. So get him off your roster so you stop feeling like you should do something with him. Send him away. If you can trade him, do it. But if you can't, I would legitimately drop him for a bunch of other names off the waiver wire.
I ask because, folks, it is week 12. We are still asking, do I start Worthy as a flex? My boy is not even worthy to be included in sit articles. Folks are not even thinking about him even being put in articles. Do you understand how crazy that is? And he is strapped to one of the best quarterbacks in the league. But folks are not paying attention enough to understand, like, this Chiefs offense is a whole new identity when Rashee Rice is in town. He is the operating function of this offense. And then you spoke on Travis Kelce. A lot of people are not really shining a lot of light on Travis Kelce being a top 5 tight end. I will even go further to say, now with Rashee Rice back, the Chiefs are pissed off. I could say he can end up being top 3 because look at the yardage. Look at the yards after the catch per reception. Literally, he was less than 5 yards last season. Now he's at 6.5 yards, where that can only climb because he has been cooking up. And you know, when Patrick Mahomes and that Chiefs offense, you know, when that team period hits that switch, when they're playoff chasing, because they are currently outseeded, they're not nowhere near, they're lurking. They're in the hunt right now. This is the Chiefs we're talking about. And it's already putting snow on the ground. And we're talking about them in this light. Yeah, I am buying in on everything that Travis Kelce and Rashee Rice has going into the playoffs. Xavier Worthy, you got to hit the wire. way. What is happening?
Hello? Hello?
No, you got me?
What? Why is it putting me over here?
Do you see that?
Yeah. Oh, okay. We're good. Can you hear me?
Yeah. What the heck was that?
I don't know. It just went crazy. It like disconnected me. You froze for a second and then it kicked me to another place. Okay. Finish wherever you were at.
I literally finished and then that happened.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I was just like pausing. I'm like, wait, you good? Oh, wait, something's going on.
No.
All right. So cool. Let's close this bad boy out. That's a sign.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Man, yeah, where they got to hit the bench. It's over. It's a wrap. And so is this podcast. Okada, is there any final thoughts for week 12, man? It's almost come to an end.
Go make some trades. I said this at the end of last week's pod, but and we talked about it a little bit throughout this pod. Do not get like into these take lock ruts where you think you're going to be as good as you were early on. The teams that are fighting for a playoff spot are going to improve right now at this time of year. If you don't also improve, you might get caught and you don't want to get caught. So make the moves you need to make. If you've got, if someone's got Zay Flowers out there and you've got Xavier Worthy and some other person you don't need, and you can package a little deal and go get yourself a better option, do that kind of thing now and set yourself up for the playoff run.
Absolutely. Take the kind words from Okada. Lock in, folks. Make some moves and have a great weekend. And I hope you guys come away with week 12 with a dub. This is the FTN Fantasy Show. Tune in next week. We will be after the holidays. We will be on a Friday. This is when the pod will be live and able to set your lineups for the remaining games. And we'll see you guys next week. Peace.